G'day and welcome to Farms Advice Podcast, where we talk everything agribusiness. If you haven't done so already, smash the subscribe button and give us a review on Apple Podcasts so that we can hit other farmers with valuable content on the go. Now, for this week's podcast, we're introducing the very first sponsor to the Farms Advice Podcast show and into our community, especially to help farmers build and grow and also find the opportunities within their niche sector. The company is Byfields. They're business advisors based over in Western Australia. First of all, I'd love to thank them for seeing the value in the podcast and sharing information freely, which leads to better relationships within agriculture. They share the same commitment of what I've created here with the podcast by creating a transparent industry, driving efficiency, and lifting productivity for Australian farmers for my own circumstances and also for yours as a listener of the podcast. So please help share this episode. It's really good to speak with Byfields and have them on board backing the podcast for the second series for this year. So a very warm welcome to the series of Beyond the Tax Return. John Bush is speaking on this episode. He is the BDM Business Development Manager and is full of knowledge and passion to improve the position of farmers in Western Australia and also Australia as a whole. Based in WA, they're bringing you the updates from the West, but I'm sure you'll find they're relatable right across Australia. So let's get into it. Today is a very special podcast. We have our sponsor introduction with Byfields and with John Bush joining us on the other end of the line. John, how are you going today?
Yeah, good, Jack. Couldn't be better. I've got a cup of tea and I'm having a chat to you, so all things good.
Amazing, mate. And we're all working in agriculture, so things are looking up.
They are.
So it's 2021. You've come onto the podcast. Can you just tell us about Byfields and what you're doing to improve farmers' outcomes?
Yeah, Jack, look, I'm really happy to be involved in this, and Byfields are. I think your vision dovetails quite well with what we do. We're all passionate in this accounting practice about agriculture. You know, many of our directors and staff, if they don't come from a farm, they've got strong ties to the ag industry and were born and bred in the country. And we've taken a fairly strong view to employ quality staff from the bush mainly, so that we have a strong, vibrant firm and I suppose that education to growers piece is really what we're about, and education to the industry, you know, passing on knowledge. And that seems to be, your vision, which we certainly appreciate, and I suppose it's a bit cliched, but just try to take each day and each month and each year, you know, we try and leave the industry in a better place than what we found it. And I think we've got, a huge responsibility to do that because, after all, you know, growers like you, Jack, are putting food on the plate.
Yeah, definitely. I think what you said there was passing on that information. There's going to be a huge shift in a generational shift coming up from my father's age down, shifting to younger people like myself and others out in the industry at the moment. So thank you for coming on board. It's great to have Byfields coming on and good to see that you can see the value in there. So there's actually some substance there moving forward.
Yeah, no, it's great, Jack. Thank you very much for the invitation.
But it's amazing. So we'll get into what you do as a firm, but also what we can look forward to coming up working together with Byfields and the Farms Advice podcast.
Yeah, sure, Jack. Byfields Business Advisors, look, we're somewhat a typical public practice firm, but I suppose what makes us a little bit different is we've got this specialization. 60% of the clients on board are growers. And then even there's a strong proportion with the balance sort of being either regional based businesses or they're involved in servicing the ag sector. So it's fundamentally our, you know, it's our space that we play in. And, you know, not only, I suppose, the typical, you know, wheat sheep grower, but, you know, we've got some pastoralists and whatnot in there. So, but I think where we sort of sit and probably why we're excited to join this podcast is, yeah, we want to spread the message, and we kind of sit in a unique spot in our marketplace, particularly here in WA. Yeah, it's a unique presence. You know, we're big enough in the industry here to make a difference, and, you know, we're big enough to have specialists in the practice that can tackle those complex issues. You know, like, we've got a separate self-managed superannuation team. But, you know, we're big, but we're also small enough to be personal to our clients, you know, not make clients a number. And I suppose probably the easiest way to explain that, like, to put it into practical terms in relation to the marketplace is, you know, we've got RSM, who many of your listeners will be aware of, you know, national firm. You know, they're $212 million of revenue, 1,200 staff. We're here in WA, you know, there's a big drop down to us. We're sort of second in line there with, you know, 11 directors and 95 staff and 8 offices. So, yeah, we sit underneath the big guys. But then, interestingly, then there's a big drop off to the smaller practices. And those smaller practices are typically your sole practitioner or 2 or 3 partner firms, and they've got small specializations in ag, some of them. There's also some of the big players which have got very small client bases, and I suppose they don't have that specialization that we really have, that understanding of farm businesses and, you know, really also not farm businesses, but the people that are behind them. So I suppose we spend most of our time really going beyond the tax return and asking those important questions and, you know, some of the things that you've been tackling on these podcasts in the past, you know, should we buy or lease the block next door, or, you know, what tax planning measures should we instigate? Things like, you know, have we got the right structure in place for the business, you know, partnership, a trust or a company, or even to the extent of, you know, are your wills up to date? Or do they even meet your wishes? You know, I think these are the real questions, right? You know, that the growers really want to know. And I like the fact that you're tackling this.
Yeah, I think it's a really important area to tackle. It's good to see I've got a bit of expertise behind me now with the team at Byfields. I can actually provide more value and more trustworthy value than just my word. But it's what you said, it's beyond the tax return, trying to improve the bottom line of farmers and also looking for opportunities within their own enterprise where they can grow and how they can improve their outcomes, like within the year, but also long term.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what we're about, Jack.
Well, it's good to have you on board. Thank you very much. So we'll get into it and just talk about what's going on with land values at the moment and agricultural production over in WA?
Yeah, Jack, I'll give you a bit of a rundown. Maybe we'll start to, for those listeners, you know, over east that maybe not so familiar with WA here. I'll probably start off with a bit of geography and then go into, I suppose the average grower profile, and then give you a bit of information about those seasonal observations. And then we'll probably leave the land piece to last. So we'll start off with the traditional the grower here. You know, our wheat belt, it extends from Geraldton down to Esperance, about 1200 kilometers, and we take those within that wheat belt region, and we when we're talking about them, generally we split them into different rainfall zones. So to give you guys a bit of an understanding, you know, our higher rainfall in both north and south regions is sort of that 450 to 750 annual rainfall, whereas the lower guys are sub 325, and that medium, you know, sits in between there. It's 325 mils to 450 mils. So hopefully that gives you an idea of the expanse and the rainfall. Yeah, the grower profile, like farms have been getting bigger. There's no doubt about that over time. You know, we're probably the average grower is approaching sort of that 5,000 hectares arable. And I think it's currently at about 4,600, 4,700 or something like that. And the number of growers are reducing. You know, the official stats, CBH, which is our bulk handling logistics over here, CBH sort of quote about 4,000, but it's probably really more likely 3,500 when you edge out, I suppose, some of those smaller hobby farms and those that have got, you know, grower numbers that are, that I suppose don't really make sense. So yeah, 3,500, it's a reducing number. It's not a straight line fashion. Like I remember when I came in, when GST was introduced, I seem to remember that there was something AWB reporting, you know, around that 10,000 mark. So, but right. Yeah, it's reducing, not straight line. And the majority of the operators are sort of around about an 80-20 split in you, if when you think about revenue. So 20% livestock and 80% grain production. And yeah, that's probably a pretty good profile of what's happening there of the growers. I look, Jack, I love stats, so I'm diving into numbers here. So you know, some of them I'm hoping they're going to make them meaningful to you so you can get a bit of a picture for what it looks like. But you know, we've got one winter crop planting, and that sits fairly average over all of the years over the last 10. You know, it's about 8.3, and you know, the one change that we're seeing is probably the mix of crops. So the rotations are changing a little bit over time. And then, you know, where do we sell our grain? You know, it's mainly export. You know, there's some sold domestically to the likes of, you know, your broiler growers like Ingham's and Biata and whatnot. But most goes export. And to give you a bit of I suppose a picture of the size of the crop, I think last year was 15.1 metric million tons, and out of what did we have, 55 for Australia. So that gives you, I suppose, hopefully a bit of a grower profile. And then look, probably moving on to some of those seasonal observations and what's happening over here, and I suppose the reaction of the growers over, I suppose, both short-term and long-term. It's obviously difficult to talk about the whole wheat belt because there's the different rainfall zones, but I don't know, if I take, let's say, York, which is about 100 Ks east of Perth as one example, and maybe further east in I suppose an easterly straight line from Perth again, you know, Hyden, which is about 370 kilometers east, and that gets to that edge of that wheat belt there. You know, I think we've had in, for both of those areas, we've had in the last, it's probably the fourth year running, I think, that we've got that confused rainfall at the moment. And what I mean by that is it's kind of these thunderstorm events coming through, and, you know, we're 1 month early to be of real use. All note that, you know, the lighter country out east does handle it better, holds it, the heavier, yeah, not so well. And the heavier is that York area, lighter out at Hyden. So, the rainfall events in this little quarter here from January to March are changing. And we're noticeably changing. We're getting these higher rainfall events in sort of late January, early February. This just gone, you know, York had over a three-day period about 110 mils. And when you look back at the averages, it's only traditionally over a longer period than 10 years, it's 85 mils. So, yeah, more rain in this period, and it's kind of a confused rain. It's coming in not really where we want it. Like, look at Hyden is the same sort of example. You know, March rainfalls, you know, Jan to March rainfalls about 75 mils, and then when you look at the 10-year averages, it's probably only 60. So people are reacting to those, or the growers are reacting to that, that seasonal change. The overall rainfall for the year annualized is reducing. It's just now coming in different times, this rain now, and obviously guys are getting out with their boom sprays to get a knockdown, but they're somewhat struggling with that because of this timing of the rain. You know, they prefer it a little bit later so they can get that good knockdown. So we're finding now at the moment, like Cape weeds somehow managing to survive through to May, and there's been some temperature shocks, and ryegrass is fairly abundant this year. So I think the management, the risk management around chemical is certainly something that's been changing over here. Really at the moment, in terms of the setup for the season, we're probably, look, most growers that I'm hearing, and I'll preface a lot of what I'm saying here is I'm not an agronomist and neither am I a management consultant. It's more what we're hearing from farmers and what we're seeing as well, is this commentary. But, most of the guys that I've been talking to in the last recent while are, if they get a double digits figure in the next couple of weeks of rain, they'll get the bar in and off they go. So and then probably a little bit further on sort of the rainfall side of things, I think the WA grower I've always found has been generally fairly innovative, and they're very efficient in growing grain on the annualized rainfall. Like, we use, I suppose, a bit of a benchmark of that efficiency, that water use efficiency. So generally speaking, for wheat, we're benchmarking to 15 kilos per millimetre. And the top 25% of growers are generally hitting that mark quite regularly. But it's the gap down to the bottom 25% of growers, which is a little bit of a concern. You know, like, they're 5 kilos off that mark. I think technology and analysis is starting to step in, and people are getting smarter about what they're doing. Like, an example at the moment is probably in the last few years is those soil amelioration techniques. You know, guys have been constantly putting down lime and gypsum, and then on, I suppose, on the tillage side, deep ripping. There's a lot of guys with refinators and they're spading. They're trying new things and new practices because we've had long periods of that no-till, just using openers. So that long-term effect of no-till has, guys are trying to rethink. To the extent, Jack, I reckon at the moment it's it's a bit of a competition who can burn up the most diesel in a paddock and how many tracks you can roll off a tractor, So, yeah, they're probably the observations I'm seeing from a cropping side.
Yeah, well, those deep rippers definitely don't waste any diesel, do they? Yeah, in the paddock.
They don't at all. Yeah, they don't at all. But, I think that we're seeing a lot of good results. A lot of guys use the DBS bar here. And if they're getting treflan in effectively and getting the crops, roots down further going through and deep ripping, it's been a pretty good result, chasing those trace elements and whatnot. So, yeah, from a cropping side, I think, we're always trying new things over here. And one thing, one message maybe is that a lot of that, we've got a strong ag consulting and agronomy industry here.
Yeah.
Certainly different to the East Coast in terms of the management consultants, the ag consultants. We've got far more over here. And I think part of what's happening and these decisions that are being made is can be attributed to them. I'm not saying everything. But I think from the grower's perspective as well, we've also got a very strong grower group presence here. So there's a lot of there's a lot of very progressive groups, you know, that meet and talk quite openly about what they're doing and try and work together. You know, they use that network of knowledge and yeah. and go and apply it, and they're not afraid to make mistakes, you know, and talk amongst themselves. These grower groups are fantastic here, and we're very lucky that we get the privilege of going and talking at a few of them. And I suppose it's, again, this message, we're just trying to spread a bit of the word, spread a bit of the knowledge, and yeah, we enjoy doing that.
Yeah, it's how you do it. And before podcasting, that's how farmers could readily improve themselves, meeting up with their local region of farmers. If one stuffs up, six others learn from his stuff up, and hopefully they don't stuff up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, like your last question to you, Jack, here. Do you find the Ask Twitter theme is building over there, or like, has it got a bit of presence? It certainly has here. Like, we'll find a lot of the younger growers will use Twitter to just ask all kinds of agronomic questions and whatnot.
Yeah, it's huge. Like on Twitter, you see some young blokes ask a question about his tractor or something, and then like another thread with a concert singer, and the one about the tractor's got a lot more going on than what the concert does. It's funny that,
I suppose it's a function of where society's going a little bit. I was going to move on to the livestock observations, if you'd like, Jack, if that's okay, because that's an interesting that and the land prices is quite interesting at the moment. From a livestock perspective, so our flock's about 14.4 mil. That's a sheep flock. And that's diminishing. And we've probably seen that really diminish. It's probably been happening for the last 20 years, in my opinion, sort of seeing numbers drop. But really in the last 3 years, particularly in the last little while, as you guys have come out of drought over on the East Coast, we're seeing people, I suppose, this accelerated reduction in numbers, because, you know, anything with legs and a head on it over here is going for $140. And the other thing is most beasts are going on the truck. So, you know, a B double is being filled because to make the trip worthwhile. There's a large movement of sheep over east, but that's not the only, factor. And we could sit here for, a couple of hours, chewing over the different factors, you know, like this labor constraints, your live export market, you know, the wool markets generally flutter into positive, but they never hold steady, maybe like the meat market. I think there's growers that are targeting some of their country to better set it up for cropping. Some of the blue ribbon areas sort of down south are moving into cropping as the climate dries. You know, there's costly infrastructure spends. And here's another generational, as you'll go back to the infrastructure spends, you know, we've seen very few 50-year-old, 60-year-old shearing sheds being replaced because of the dollars involved. But just going back onto another generational transition, I think there's also a change in attitude. I don't think we can let that go by. I heard a young grower the other day say to me, if it doesn't have any keys in it, I'm not interested. Like, just not interested. So I think there's a bit of attitudinal change there, and that's contributing to it. And look, I'm not, this is not doomsday, you know, for the sheep industry over here. Like, I think that, in the longer term, that there is a place in farming enterprises for them. We're certainly seeing, pretty big decline. And I think it's not always the outside factors. I think there's also some reasonably well thought out management decisions here that are taking place. and playing out. And I think that it's much around risk with these seasonal factors that we were talking about before, with the timing of rainfall. I heard Alan Kohler say the other day, I don't know where he got it from, but risk is the known unknowns and uncertainty is the unknown unknowns. And I think that a lot of our growers over here are very, very analytical. They recognize the difference between risk and uncertainty, and they know that they can manage risk.
Yep.
So I think, for an example, like a grower here in the Eastern Wheat Belt, like they know that they can make some money on, let's say 200 mils of in-season grain, in-season rainfall, a bit of summer rain, they can make some money off sheep. With 150 mils, they know that they have to have those, feedstocks, in the background, and it's costly exercise, difficult to manage. And when they're taking the view that they've got to get those fat lands off the place, by the end of September, it's got its own logistical and challenging factors to it. So I think what a lot of the guys are saying that, well, it's actually an easier risk to manage. If we get 150 mils in season rain and we've got a 10 and 15 mil start to establish the crop, then we're more likely to make a return. So I think generally speaking, the growers here are actually, it's not just of its own making because of external factors. It's actually they're making a conscious decision. And that conscious decision is having reasonable flow-on effects as well in the industry. Like all of the industries that support, the abattoirs are, that's going to be an interesting space to watch in the next little while. Like we've got Wamco and Fletcher's here that are pretty big. They obviously need some sort of level of throughput. Some industry experts are saying that we're maybe possibly hitting that tipping point of, where that break-even point is. So, I suppose watch this space here. The sheep sheep space is a pretty interesting spot to watch.
They say, like, in the next 5 years, you think restocking, if we can get some consistency around the rainfall?
Yeah, look, I think there's all, like I said before, there's always a place for sheep in an enterprise, but it's the elasticity issues that go with it. Like if you take the self-replace route, it's going to take time first. And then if the prices are where they're at, that's a seriously demotivating factor. So I think it'll, take price and a bit of time for it to build back up.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I was at Bendigo Sheep Show a few years ago, and WA sheep were towering over all these East Coast sheep.
Yeah.
So they're breeding them big out there for sure.
Mate,
this year's flying through. It's already April 1st, recording today. And coming into the end of the tax year, as a farmer planning your tax year, what should we be doing and how can we improve? Trying to encourage farmers to get back in the office and do that little bit each week, bit of consistency there as well.
Look, tax planning is fundamentally one of our cornerstone services, and one that we do encourage. Like in terms of, like, we've trained clients over the years that I'd say that there'd be a very small percentage across the grower group here that don't have a tax estimate prepared. So first thing is just accept that it's something that's important to do. There's dollars that can, go out the door if you're not keeping an eye on what's going on from a tax planning viewpoint. But I say that in the same breath as saying that I think a lot of people get tied up in tax and make it a primary factor. The classic is going and buying a bit of paint a new tractor or a header or whatever to solve a tax problem. And with the accelerated depreciation this year. Particularly, that was something that, you know, we've been talking to machinery dealers, like there's just, yeah, there's gear shortages at the moment and stuff going out the door. So I suppose my message there is economic decisions first and tax, it comes secondary. That's an absolute must. And I think another thing that gets forgotten quite often is in the first place is making sure that your structure is correct. So I'm talking about your business structure here. You know, is it right for your circumstances? You know, like a classic example would be I picked up a new grower a few years ago, I took out their financial statements, had a bit of a look at them. And I, in doing so, I was sort of asking the client, why are you set up as a company? Why are you trading just as a company here? What was the reason behind this? And the client sort of said, it was tax motivated, but I think there was also something in there about asset protection. And I said, yeah, that's fine. I suppose you're chasing a lower tax rate and it's a flat rate. But I said, you're potentially missing a whole area of primary production concessions here, because companies are a separate legal entity. When income passes through them, they change. That nature of the income changes. It changes from primary production income to a dividend, you know, as a shareholder. And most of the concessions, primary production concessions, like your primary production averaging, FMDs, you know, those concessions are all in individual names. They're not, you know, they can't be accessed while you're operating company. And yeah, we did some figures and there was some huge differences for when we eventually restructured him into a family trust. And, you know, like he had some kids coming up to turn 18, and, you know, by using a family trust and making trust distributions to the children and using their low average histories, you know, when they turn, you know, in the 5 years leading up to them turning 18, you know, in the year that they turned 18, you know, we were allocating 150 grand of taxable income, and it's still primary production income. And, you know, the tax rate was sub 10% because of the averaging benefits, as opposed to, well, back then at the company rate, it was 30%. So, you know, 150 grand and there's a 20% difference in tax rate just from changing your structure. Well, I think, you need to be aware of what the structure is the message there, and how the structure operates. You know, the other thing that this client has, and I don't like using technical terms too much, but had big Division 7A issues. So they're basically loans that he'd made to himself, and the tax office just doesn't particularly like those loans. They want to charge interest on them or deem a dividend. So, I suppose the key message still here is that just understand the structure, make sure you set up correctly in the first place.
How do you come across many farmers that aren't set up appropriately? Like what are they set up mostly as, what you come across? Sole proprietor, partnership, or?
Yeah, good question, Jack. Look, most of them here operate in a family trust, or if it's not a family trust, it's a partnership between a family trust and either an individual or a company.
Yep.
And I suppose you're getting the best of both worlds there. Very few sole proprietors, very, very few. Very few individual partnerships. So where, let's say, mum and dad and son or son and daughter are part of a partnership. It's a simple structure, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. And with that simplicity, you also miss out on some of the benefits of having a more complicated structure. And one of those is that concept of joint and several liability. You know, it's one thing that gets missed a lot. You know, something goes wrong in the farming partnership and that farming partnership is exposed. All of a sudden, the individuals are exposed. There's no veil between, you know, of risk back to the individuals. So all of a sudden, you know, mum and dad might have a house, you know, on the coast and that gets captured up all in the farm business. So yeah, most of them are family trusts with a corporate trustee. If not, it's a family trust in a structure with a company. And that company has probably come into more, it's probably become more prevalent at the moment with, especially over here with certain areas, certain areas like in Esperance, where we've seen very high profits, which are transposed to, you know, like some of them down there, 100% equity clients on their balance sheet. And with those high average histories, we're trying to access that company tax rate that's been chipping backwards. So that'd be the common structuring issue.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, for planning your tax as a farmer coming into the end of the tax year, it'd be great to nut out a few of these topics for the episode. So I'm sure the listeners can look forward to planning their tax, but trying to make it a bit more funner than what it sounds. trying to improve your bottom line as well.
Yeah, look, that's what it's all about. And look, some of it can be dry. We don't shy away from that. Well, and we've got a pretty robust process for going through it. And like at the moment, our guys right now, they're either sitting at a kitchen table running through these tax plans with growers, or they're in the office here and they're punching the numbers at the moment. So yeah, we've got a good process. And generally speaking, we get in early too. I think that's another message there that's very important. Plan early, get in before seeding. And then equally as important is monitor and adapt with your plans as you go. You know, don't be afraid to prepare a second estimate if the season breaks differently to what you budgeted. Adapt plans. Ultimately very important. And probably one other thing on the tax planning side I think I've got a bit of a bugbear with is I suppose the message of lifting your eyes up a little bit and looking a little bit further down the path. What I mean by that is understanding your primary production averaging and what it's doing, you know, with high years dropping off, replaced by low years, or low years dropping off and replaced by high years. I think those guys that go in with an appetite for tax reduction and they're reducing tax, you know, down to, I suppose, what I'd say unhealthy amounts, I don't think it's got much utility. Like, I'll give you an example, probably. The story will tell here. I don't think I'll ever forget this one. Client came in, marginal area, two sons, they hadn't been operating the farm for a long time, but they were going gangbusters at it. And the two boys were really charged up to go and buy some more land. Anyway, when I had a look at the financial situation of the grower and why they came on board was that they had a swag of FMDs in place, so farm management deposits. So they've been putting these farm management deposits in place each year and paying little or no tax in their own names. Farm management deposits were sitting there. They'd racked up about, I think it was 1.2 mil and maxed everything out. And sure enough, next door, farm comes for sale. And unexpectedly. Anyway, they wandered off to the bank and said, yeah, well, we've got this money in FMDs. We'll drag them out and we'll buy the farm and we'll borrow the rest. Anyway, the accountant that was doing the work before I picked it up, did the calculations on the withdrawal of the FMDs. And because they were coming out all in one hit, it was a substantial tax bill, which actually put the farm purchase in jeopardy. But worse still, so they they decided, well, okay, the other alternative is we'll just leave the FMDs there and we'll trickle them out over time. But we asked the financial institution, you know, they asked the banker, you know, can we use the FMDs as security? You know, that's equity there. You know, you can draw down on it. Unfortunately, farm management deposits can't be used as security. So this war chest that he had there was just a tax liability. I mean, mind you, look, I don't, and I've just written an article for Department of Ag, or submission, if you like, about using FMDs as a risk management tool. They've got their place. That's absolute for sure. And they're not always just a tax dodge, for want of a better term. But in this circumstance, the farm next door sold this grower. He and his sons, didn't buy it. It sort of just went by. And that was just a strategy around it, just not lifting those eyes up to look further down the track and understanding what they were doing, you know. I think that was just some, it was misunderstanding and unfortunate. And since then, we've tried to solve their problem and fix it.
Yeah, well, I guess they're not the only example that you may have or what others do over here on the East Coast as well. So it's coming back to planning out your tax, talking to your advisor and being a bit more closer to the ground and having an overview of what's going on prior to wanting to jump in and buy the neighbour's farm.
Yeah, for sure. That's it. And it's just, listening to your advisor, working with them closely. We got a unique position here where we're very lucky in that we have there's a three-way relationship, which is generally fairly strong on most for most growers. It's between the bank, the consultant, and the accountant. That's usually we're all pulling in the same direction and advising, and we all speak a slightly different language as well. You know, the bank sometimes I think speaks Spanish, but you know, like we all speak a different language. We all take a different view on it. We're all, providing different input. And I think it's very important to get those different views. If you don't, you're missing out.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're pulling in different tools from the toolbox and using them, putting the farmer a better step forward as well. So, but we better wrap it up here and keep moving forward so we can get on with the show. A huge thing for myself and others my age, succession planning is looming. Just to have the conversation is a huge step. But what's some things that you've seen yourself implementing or an example?
Jack, this is a huge topic. And look, I don't even think I'm going to do any service. We will hardly skim on it really here. But, you know, it's a significant issue. And you're right. Like across the average age of a grower is 58 years, according to the last censuses. And we've looked through our lists and it's sort of, very similar. And it's steadily increasing. But I think like tax planning or all planning, really, it's maybe you can live and die by this. It's never really too late to start planning, certainly. You know, I think you can still get things moving. Don't feel like it's too late, but rarely is it too early either. I think the conversation needs to start, early on the piece. So, it's just about getting in early. I think there is the message. The other fundamental, and probably a fundamental of good, a good business, whether it be a business that's a machinery dealer, or whether it's a farming business, is that good communication. Communication that's inclusive and practical. There's non-emotion driven discussions for the family around longer term planning, I think is ultimately we see the really good growers, those top 25%, and even those below, but the really good ones, the communication is really key to how they operate. And whether it's even on a short-term basis or a long-term. And I think the communication in my mind is, has got probably, well, it's got two sides by definition, really, you know, talking and listening. You know, from a talking point of view, I believe that there's, you know, you've got to realize that there's never a safe place to speak up. But on the flip side, it's never a safe place not to speak up. So I think making sure that there's an environment that conversation is happening is very important. And I think on the listening side of things, I don't think that necessarily people generally do that very well. You know, I've found at times, you know, if there is a difficult family meeting that we're having, you know, because one person's not listening to the argument of the other, I try and get them to switch roles. So yep. In some cases, they're asked the listener to repeat back in a more accurate and articulate manner the talker's, you know, argument. It's bloody hard for them to do, but what it does is it gives the other person the terms of reference, and it allows them to see through their own lens, see through their eyes. And increasingly, again, some of this is broadly a generational issue, you know, like the baby boomers, you know, and this is a gross generalization I'll put out here, but, you know, they like to be in control. They're direct with their communication style. That's well known, just as well known as Gen Y, you know, communicating through more electronic means and, yep. You know, have a different style of things. And I think that, the two do find it difficult to communicate. So, yeah, communication's the key. Getting in and planning early. They're really two takeaways at a very broad level. And maybe the other side of it is when you're planning for that transition, take a long-term view. You know, like traditionally, what we see over here, you know, like let's say in your circumstance, Jack, at your age there, you know, management and responsibility, you know, you're taking that over a period of 2 to 6 years, you know, from when you come back, then probably the expectation is profits and being introduced to the trading structure formally sort of over, you know, 3 to 7 or 10 year period. And then I suppose the existing assets over, you know, and we're talking about land over that 10 or can even be out to 25 year period. So I suppose the message here is it's a long time, mate. Like you've got to put those plans in place. And I mean, I was fortunate, you know, in some of the succession plans we were doing, like, yeah, I got to see the next generation take over in each of those steps. And that's just such a great process to be walking through. Like for us, that's what gets me out of bed. Like when you can, see transitions happening and communication is good, and everyone's aware of what's happening. And you've got, most importantly, all of the family involved plus the professionals, you know, often forgotten are spouses, often forgotten is a mediator, children to some extent, you know, the younger kids. You have to get, you know, there's a point in time when rubber needs to hit the road with lawyers. You know, bank needs to be involved and consultant. So through that whole process. So get everyone that needs to be involved, communicate it well, and it should go fairly smoothly, but they don't all. So
I've seen some good and some really bad occasions where it's gone wrong for the family, but that's another topic that we'll speak about later on in the series, breaking down succession planning with your firm, Byfields. So that would be really good to dive deeper into that one as well. And moving into cash flow and budgeting and forecasting, how important is this for farmers? I imagine it's quite important, but what's your take?
Yeah, look, it's very important. I this time of the year is a year for planning. And I think one of the problems though that needs to be addressed is that you know, like you go to the ad consultant or even clients who come to me and we go about preparing a budget and we spend, you know, 6 hours or so, you know, depending on the size of the farm and what's involved and the complexity, but spend a reasonable amount of the day actually going through the budget and just punching the numbers in. And then you know, get to the statement of position and then, you know, to a few more ratios and that sort of stuff. But you don't really spend a lot of your time on the really important things, the planning, you know, the scenario analysis. So I think that's one part is with your budgeting, be well prepared for when you go and see your advisor, no matter who they are. And then I think the other thing is probably don't see enough budgets where there's a average budget, a good budget prepared, a poor and an absolute disaster, you know, like a mixer, like a real. And I think that until you get the perspective of the numbers there, I don't think you really can make great decisions during the year. I think those that have got a good understanding of where are like a viewpoint from the very worst position can that allows them to make some good decisions.
Yeah. So you'd start just from as worst scenario possible first.
No, I'd do the average budget first, but yeah. I'd make sure that you've got an idea of where the worst position is. Yeah,
definitely.
It'll allow you to make the most educated decision, right? Like it has to by logic.
Yeah, and you can only go up from there, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Spend time. I think the other thing is out of that budget is, you know, like the budget and the statement of position is spend some time on those, on, you know, on your primary and secondary indicators of how well the business is performing. You know, not only just the real simple things of, you know, your equity percentages and equity growth and return on capital, but take a bit of a deeper dive and look at some of those, you know, finance costs as a percentage of interest and livestock value as a percentage of livestock income, machinery value. You know, get into those and take those numbers and benchmark them. And probably this is one other maybe difference because I'm not aware that there's anything over east on this side, but we've got Plan Farm and we've got Farm Enco over here that produce some pretty good benchmark booklets annually each year, and they're very good analysis of what's based on those different rainfall zones that I was talking about, and they're a really great tool to use to take your numbers, compare them to others and make decisions based on that. And look, we all know that they're just benchmarks, you know, that there's mitigating circumstances why those numbers are a little bit skewed, but ultimately they're a guide. And businesses, you know, whether they're a farming business or not a farming business, like Byfield's here, we benchmark ourselves and we use that information to make decisions on what we're doing and where we're going.
Absolutely. And you don't want to be left in no man's land, not knowing where you are in response to others throughout the industry.
That's right. That's right.
Leading on to the last question we've got, what platforms are farmers using over in the West that may improve how we record our numbers, our bookkeeping?
Yeah, look, Jack, there's probably in AgriMaster here was a program that's been around for a long time now. And that software program was built from a management on a management basis. And with a lot of growers and we've been advocating AgriMaster for a long time, a lot of growers have been using that here. I suppose a familiar bit of software for you guys would be Phoenix. You know, Phoenix has got a bit more of a East Coast presence. But we're now seeing with, so I suppose back to AgriMaster, that management based, and it's adapted over time to more financial based. So what, you know, talking the accountant's language to prepare a set of financials. Yep. It's also been adapted for business activity statements, for single touch payroll, for diesel rebates, for all of these things. Adapted over time, it's kept up. One thing that we're seeing is the presence of Xero. Xero, there's been a push towards Xero for clients. And they're really chasing the simplicity of the Xero platform, and then building on their software stack with Figured and a few others there to plug into the back of Xero. And Xero is cost effective, probably the main thing is it's intuitive. So a simple example, like you've got a telephone bill, and that's in a regular periodic manner, it will code that for you. Without you having to do anything and make the right allocation and that sort of thing. The Xero versus AgriMaster versus Phoenix, probably not my place to say where the preference lies, because it really depends on, again, we go back to the starting point. You want to work out what outcome that you're chasing.
It's all individual, isn't it?
Look, for some growers, they're just wanting to prepare a BAS and get the numbers to the accountant for the financial statements for the year and tax. For others, they're wanting to be dive deeper into analysis and prepare management reports. So I think it's horses for courses, really. There's no strong direction here or there with it, but we're certainly seeing Xero take a bigger and bigger market share. Especially the other thing that's been, I suppose, holding back Xero is because it's cloud based and the internet in the bush has been traditionally not as good. That's been holding that back, but now as time rolls on, we're seeing better internet speeds and more consistent, and it's changing.
Yeah, the industry as a whole is digitizing, which is exciting to see. And it comes through like your place of work. You're seeing that farmers are starting to digitize their bookkeeping, even the way they go about their day-to-day.
Yeah, for sure. The uptake of technology has been great. Albeit we've still got a long way to go. Like Jack, I went over to Hanover to Agritechnica and had a look over there. That was like, it was like a kid in a candy shop. You know, the some of the technology there that they're using, and the scale that they're using, you know, like there was and integrations as well, like Farm365, that's run by was owned by Class, you know, the using the telematics out of Class and integrating that with NDVI technology integrating that with a broking technology for broking platform for selling of their grain and the scale, you know, like Russian producers, you know, huge producers and Ukraine producers there that have just that are using this stuff. Like it's one central hub. It blew my mind, absolutely blew my mind. That together with the largest drone I've ever seen. it was something else. One thing I recommend when COVID lifts, and if anyone gets the chance and you get the opportunity to go over to see this field day and see what's on display, it is just something else. But yeah, the uptake of tech is pretty good. We're seeing more and more growers take it on board, embrace it, but we've still got a way to go when you compare to the rest of the world.
Yeah, definitely. We're just in the adoption phase, and imagine when everyone's starting to use these tools, the tools that are gonna only improve from the feedback from farmers. Farmers love giving feedback. If it's not working, they're going to tell you.
Yeah, they do. And look, and from what I've heard, you know, from different, you know, like AgriWeb there and AgriDigital and AgWorld here, you know, all of these people playing or organisations playing in the digital space, you know, they've got some good funding and they've come to the market saying that they're willing to listen, which is great.
Yeah, that's the response I'm getting from like talking to ag techs through the podcast and marketing. So it's really good to see for that aspect as well, trying to improve what they're doing. But John, yeah, thanks for coming on. We've gone over an hour, smashed it out. If I didn't speak, it was only because I was listening into what you're saying as a farmer myself and trying to improve what we're doing. But it's unreal to have the voice from WA giving us your input, but also rings very true for us on the East Coast here as well. So looking forward to having you on the podcast throughout the year.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jack. Enjoyed it. Yeah, look, I probably speak a bit too much, but hopefully got some good messages that you guys can take away and a different perspective from over this side of the country.
Yeah, definitely. It's great to have your perspective as well. And for the topics that we spoke on today, we'll go into deeper depth of them further into the show. So that'd be fantastic.
Ripper. Sounds good, Jack.
What was discussed on today's episode does not constitute as financial advice and is intended for general advice only. Please talk to the team at Byfields or your own financial advisor about your next steps. Thanks for listening to our very first sponsor introduction with Byfields and John for coming on and also for them seeking out the Farms Advice podcast. I'm excited that they're so excited. Each time I speak to John and the team, they seem very keen to speak through the medium and also to better connect with their existing clients and also to connect with future ones. But also, if you're just looking to take a look into how you could improve your own agribusiness through different key takeaways, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of value coming up in the future from themselves at Byfields. So what you can expect from them and their services, a full range of taxation services, taxation planning, succession planning, estate planning, structure advice, land transfers, family farm duty exemptions, capital gains tax, cash flow budgeting, forecasting and bookkeeping. So we're going to try and make that a little bit more funner than it sounds, but it's all in all to help you build a better agribusiness. No worries, we'll leave it there and thank you and we'll see you next week. And stay tuned for Beyond the Tax Return series.